morning, members. I'd like to call the meeting of the Environment Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order at this time. Before us, we have the minutes from the March 31st meeting. Representative Rarick, would you like to move those minutes forth, please?
So moved.
Thank you. Any comment, any questions on the minutes? All those in favor of the minutes as presented, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries. Minutes are approved. First up on our agenda today, Representative Keel has House File 2946. I'll move the Keel bill onto Ways and Means. So the motion is to send it to Ways and Means.
Yes.
Okay. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill that came to me by way of a family member, a mother, who was questioning why we charged our National Guard members. They're non-residents of Minnesota, but they are active members of the Minnesota National Guard, and wanted to know why they had to pay a fishing and hunting license out of state. And so basically what this is asking us to acknowledge that a serviceman and Minnesota National Guard member can pay the license for a Minnesota hunting and fishing license. And that's the gist of the bill.
Okay, questions from members? This is a public meeting. Is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill?
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources.
Mr. Meyer.
We do support the concept, and we're working with the author on it. I don't know if you've looked at the fiscal note or not, but it does have a small fiscal impact which the department is willing to absorb. But it basically comes from the surcharges that are placed on these non-resident licenses. For example, non-resident fishing licenses, there's a $5 surcharge that goes into the AIS accounts, and then the non-resident hunting licenses, there's a $5 surcharge that goes into the walk-in access account. So those two programs would be receiving a little bit less money, but you know, if you look at the fiscal note, we're estimating $2,400 of the walk-in access and the AIS surcharge, and then another impact from the fishing license, hunting and fishing license. It's minimal, Mr. Chairman. We're willing to work with the author on that. And then the other issue was, I believe Representative McNamara was discussing a reciprocity type proposal, but we never got to that point. So,
other questions or comments? Hanson, would you have?
No, I just wanted to be on record.
Yep. Any further discussion on the bill? Representative Keel, closing comments?
No, thank you, members, for hearing this bill.
Okay. With that, renew my motion to pass House File 2946 to Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next bill. House File 3409. That's the bill that we heard last week here in committee. We had an amendment. Today we have a delete all, a DE1 amendment before you. It was my bill. We had the hearing on it. We had the amendment, but then we wanted to do an oral amendment to that. Ms. Taylor, would you walk us through the amendment, please?
Mr. Chair, members, the DE1 amendment for House File 3409, what it does is it incorporates the amendment we adopted previously, plus the oral amendments, plus an additional change on line 1.4 industrial was added to the heading as well. If you remember, the amendment had added industrial owners or permit holders, and you'll see that on lines 1.15 and 1.16 and a few other places. So the amendment simply just incorporates what had already been adopted plus the additional industrial on the heading.
Thank you. So I'd like to move the DE1 amendment. All those in favor, get the bill shape I like it. Say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Good. The amendment is... Members' questions. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is this the magic shield bill that we were talking about when you were presenting earlier?
I think it is, yes. The member serves me correctly, it is. I've had my magic shield up so much, I'm not sure which one.
I have a couple questions for PCA, if they're available.
I think they are. Scott, you're welcome. State your name and who you represent, please, for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. My name is Greta Gauthier. I'm with the MPCA.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and Ms. Gauthier. On line 1.13 and 1.14, where it defines a biological nutrient removal system, could you describe what those are or how they're applied?
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, I brought technical staff with me from the agency to address technical questions.
State your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Katrina Kessler. I'm a professional engineer and the water assessment manager at the Pollution Control Agency.
Thank you. Proceed, Ms. Kessler.
Mr. Chair and members, a biological nutrient treatment system is simply a wastewater treatment system that has specific units that rely on specific bacteria that are fostered and cultured and grown within the tanks to remove both phosphorus and nitrogen.
And Mr. Chair and the testifier, how widely deployed is that technology right now?
Ms. Kessler.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we have biological phosphorus systems already in place in Minnesota. We don't have any biological nitrogen systems currently operating here, and they are widely operated elsewhere in the country.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so currently, biological nitrogen removal systems are not used in Minnesota?
Ms. Kessler.
Mr. Chair and committee members, there are, I think there's one treatment system in Minnesota that may have biological nutrient removal to meet a nitrate limit based on the drinking water standard, but because we don't have nitrogen standards currently in place to protect aquatic life, is not widely used in Minnesota.
Representative Hanson?
And Mr. Chair and the testifier, is that technology used in more northern states where there's different weather conditions, or is it deployed in southern states where there's not the extremes? Or
Ms. Kessler.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, this treatment is used in northern European countries, in New York State, in climates that are somewhat comparable to Minnesota. We recognize that this is something that is fairly new to Minnesota, so the bill is situated in such a way that it will allow the technology to be phased in a way that will make sense here.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we would have what this bill would do is approve a technology that's not being used in the state, allow for public funding of the technology that's not used in the state, implement that technology, and then give a 20-year exemption from other requirements, any requirements on standards for that technology that's currently not used in the state. Is that correct?
Is that a question, Representative Hanson?
Yes. Is that correct?
Ms. Kessler, Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, there is no nitrogen water quality standard for aquatic life right now in Minnesota. This technology has been used in many other parts of the country and the world, and we have every reason to believe that it will work in Minnesota. And then if a entity, in the case of this bill, an industrial or municipal wastewater permittee, were to accept and volunteer to undergo regulatory certainty, they would still have a permit, and that permit would be enforced every 5 years during the span of time in which they would get certainty. And the certainty would be that their limit for nitrogen in their permit would not be made more stringent over that period of time.
Representative Hanson. Thanks. Representative Hornstein, may I have a question? Representative Torkelson, let's to this point. I'll move on to Representative Torkelson, who's next on the list.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, to that point, if there is a more stringent federal standard, for example, as outlined potentially in the Clean Water Act or some other legislation, how would that affect this? This type of certainty or uncertainty?
Ms. Kessler, please.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this technology is currently recognized as the best available technology by EPA, and therefore that's why it's used around the country when nitrogen removal is necessary. If a water quality standard came in that required something more than this, we don't know what type of technology would be required, because there is nothing that can do more than biological nitrogen or biological nutrient removal right now for nitrogen.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Gauthier, so this is a voluntary program, is that correct?
Mr. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Representative Torkelson, this is a voluntary program.
And if someone enters into this program and signs up for it, they will be required to meet certain standards, is that correct?
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Representative Torkelson. I'm not sure what you mean by certain standards.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, there'll be phosphorus and nitrogen limits that will be part of their permit.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you. And Representative Torkelson, there is a phosphorus water quality standard now, so that would be something that if that is a situation in the location at which they're located, they would be required to comply with that. And under the voluntary nature of the program, essentially, the entity, whether it's a city or an industrial permit holder, is voluntarily accepting a nitrogen limit that we would work with them on, and that would be in their permit.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And they will be required to continue to meet those limits for the entire life of this agreement. Is that correct?
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Torkelson, that is correct. Under this program, we would work with the entity from the day one on design and engineering so that we know that the system that they eventually put in place will be the best available technology and the best that they can do at that site. So therefore, that will be the limits that will be in their permit that would be would stay in their permit and not be made more stringent over the life of that equipment. And I believe there are conditions in the bill, too, Mr. Chairman and Representative Torkelson, that the entity has to maintain and keep the equipment in proper working order, et cetera.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. Just one more question, Mr. Chair. So the 20-year potential length of this agreement is going to be worked out between the agency and the permittee also. It won't necessarily be 20 years, is that correct?
No.
Ms. Gauthier, or Ms. Kessler.
So the way that the, excuse me, Mr. Chair and committee members, the way that it's written is that it could extend up to 20 years, but it'll be determined based on the technology that is chosen.
Mr. Chairman, however,
yes.
Most of the technology out there now, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, Katrina, the technology out there now has a lifespan of around 20 years.
Follow up, Representative Torkelson?
I'm done.
Okay. And Ms. Gauthier, would you just, as a reminder for the committee, what is the phosphate standard at this time? Ms. Kessler.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we have both lake and river phosphorus or eutrophication standards to prevent nuisance algae growth that harm aquatic life, and they're based on the nutrient regions around the state to protect the sensitive populations in those areas of the state. So it varies based on location.
Yep. Thank you.
Chair.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to go to the back of the DE, the subdivision 3. And to the testifiers, so the way I read this based on what you've just said is an entity could apply for certainty up to December 31st, 2031. And then, so you could add 20 years onto that, that this bill that we would pass in 2016 would provide the potential December 31st, 2051. Probably after everybody in this room is gone. That's the sunset. And I know it says, or following a nitrate-nitrogen standard, but let's say that doesn't happen, so that we would provide this magic shield, potentially until December 31st, 2051. If that's correct, this is probably the most significant bill we'll be dealing with this session. This is a major, major change. Ms. Kessler.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the way that the bill is written is such that there's flexibility in what type of biological nutrient treatment might be installed in any given place. If for some reason it did extend up to that time, this would encompass any evolutions of biological nutrient treatment that would occur between now and then, and we would work out the limit to be expressed in the permit such that they would be needing to meet what is the best available at that time, and hoping that over time that would decrease because technology would improve.
Mr. Chairman, if yes. I may add also that we do anticipate that that there will be a nitrogen aquatic life water quality standard probably before 2031. However, it took 20 years, you're right, it took 20 years for us to get a phosphorus water quality standard fully in place. So it depends, in part, on the amount of litigation that occurs that may slow or stop our process.
I think it's important to, we're not an intent state, we're a say-what-you-mean state, and I think we've gone through the last year with the challenges involved and say what you mean. So if the agency means that you would adapt to include the new technology to meet the standard or whatever standard is higher, that should be said in the law. The details matter rather than the two pages here of or going back in some court in 2051, going back to see what the tape says. Because I think some of those details would need to be worked out. As I said before, I'm skeptical of this. Maybe trying this on a pilot status to see for a few entities and having a quicker sunset. But this appears to open up a whole complete different way of doing things without much detail of how things change over from now until December 31st, 2051.
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, thank you for your comment. Keep in mind this program is voluntary, so in essence it is a pilot because we know that there are certain communities who are well poised right now because of their need to comply with the new phosphorus standard and knowing that their equipment in their wastewater treatment facility is of an age and of a condition that they will have to build out or reconstruct. There are going to be a subset of communities that are going to be interested in adopting regulatory certainty. So it's not a requirement for everybody. It's a voluntary option, first of all. And second of all, related to your concerns about the date at which the offer is closed, we do know that there are communities right now who are interested in doing this. And so, given what we know about the communities that are able to do it and the ones that are definitely interested in looking at this should it be passed into law, we do know that we will be removing more nitrogen from the waters of Minnesota than if we do nothing. And so it is an effort to get nitrogen out of our waters because it causes problems for aquatic life, as you know. And it is an effort to do that now, and an incentive combined with the bonding proposal that the governor has put forward for municipalities, at least. And let me be clear that the industrial permittees in this bill would not be getting state money to do their regulatory certainty. We talked about that before, but just to be clear. But there is funding that the governor has proposed $167 million in his funding request. And also, he has proposed raising the cap on those dollars and the percentage of the project that it can cover. So combined with that money, regulatory certainty, we feel is a strong incentive to move in the direction of getting nitrogen out of our waters now before we have to wait for a process that, as you say, could take longer than expected to get a nitrogen aquatic life water quality standard in place and approved by the EPA.
Representative Hansen, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just wanted to get clearly on the record that this would be municipality or industrial permit holder may receive certainty only one time, but the industrial permit holder may not receive public funding.
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. It's one time per facility. Some municipalities have multiple facilities. For example, the Met Council has multiple facilities. They have indicated they would be interested in looking at this starting with one of their facilities. And we are open to doing one regulatory certainty agreement for each facility. Because again, some cities have more than one. And yes, the industrial permit holders would not be eligible for public funds through the PFA.
Representative Hansen.
But back to the original line of questioning, we haven't deployed this technology anywhere in the state yet, but we would make the, or we've deployed it to one location out of the multitude of sites, and we would be providing this option all sites up to December 31st, 2051.
Ms. Gauthier, or Ms. Kessler.
Mr. Chair and members, it's important to note that there are facilities in Minnesota that are using biological phosphorus treatment right now. This is similar but a little bit different, but it does require that biology actively degrade organic material in cold climates. So we have reason to believe that this will work just fine in Minnesota based on that experience, and also that it's in use around the country and around the world in climates that are comparable to Minnesota.
Thank you. Follow up.
Well, we know that, you know, in soils, the nitrate, the change from the nitrogen cycle is dependent on temperature. And so those changes are not the same as with phosphorus. Mm-hmm. So the microbes, as it gets colder, are less active breaking down mm-hmm. in the nitrogen cycle. So that's not an apples to apples comparison with. Is that correct? It's not apples to apples.
Ms. Kessler.
Members and chairman and members, actually the bacteria that degrade phosphorus do work slower in colder climates. All bacteria work, unless they're, you know, very accustomed to the bottom of the ocean, like where it's cold, they work slower in colder climates because it's a biological process that moves faster when it's warmer. But there are ways to insulate tanks and add covers to maximize the different biology such that you can get both phosphorus denitrification or nitrification and denitrification to remove both phosphorus and nitrogen in cold climates.
Thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looking at the DE1 and that question that this is just general, so I'm not going to a line, but the question that I asked when we had this conversation a week ago or so, and that is, there's nothing in here that is going to prohibit a municipality from going with an on-land system where they get out of the NPDES permit altogether. Is that correct?
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Purcell, yes, that is correct.
Thank you. And I bring that up because I know it can be very successful, I'm sure you do too, in our climate, and can reuse water and nutrients and keep it out of the surface water. So promoting that, obviously. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, I also want to express similar concerns to Representative Hansen's in terms of both the timeline, you know, this long sunset, and this voluntary approach. You know, when I was a kid, you know, big news story was when the Cuyahoga River caught on fire, you know, in Cleveland. And I think that was the wake-up call around water issues for the whole country. And we, you know, passed a bunch of laws, and now things are getting, you know, at least the Great Lakes area, you know, we've cleaned those up, and now we're backsliding again. And, you know, I think this voluntary approach with a long sunset is not the direction that we should be taking in terms of how we approach these issues. I understand that we're looking at some technologies here, but I think there's just a precedent here that I'm uncomfortable with, and so I would oppose this bill and hope that this isn't the beginning of a trend where we look at, you know, voluntary approaches as opposed to a more regulatory approach.
Thank you. Mr. Strand, you're on the list to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Douglas Park. Welcome, Mr. Strand. Be brief if you can, which I know you can. Thank you. State your name for the record and who you represent.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Scott Strand. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. I want to start by acknowledging that we certainly share with the staff over at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency the desirability of taking some steps in the interim here before nitrogen standards are adopted to try to reduce nitrogen discharges. We think that's a laudable goal, but we do have some serious concerns about the bill that's actually before the committee. First of all, we do think that the estimate of time that it's going to take to get aquatic life standards, the basic standard for nitrogen in place, has been fairly, I think, inflated by quite a bit. We've been in contact with the Environmental Protection Agency. There are some things that still need to be done, but the job of getting a science-based nitrogen standard in place is not something that's going to take decades. It's something that's going to take, it should take, a couple of years. There's been a draft standard on the webpage at MPCA since 2010 that gives us, I think, a guideline already about what that standard is going to look like. So we have a method in place to address nitrogen, which is to get a nitrogen standard in place. I think that process needs to run its course. Second, the bill as drafted does not actually require the PCA to include effluent limits for either nitrogen or phosphorus in the permits. Now, the agency staff testified that that's their intent, that they plan to get effluent limits in there, that they plan to ask for effluent limits as part of the deal, but it's not actually in the bill. All the bill says is that it's up to the commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency to decide whether or not he's going to grant permits that include these terms. There is no requirement for effluent limits in the bill anywhere. Third, we're concerned that there are now, and there have always been, developments in the technology for cleaning up our water. Even today, in terms of taking nitrates out of the water, you'll see in the literature a combination of the biological nutrient reduction strategies that the agency is talking about. There are certain chemical additives that can help. In some of the more difficult cases, wastewater treatment plants have had to move to membrane filters in order to reduce those levels. And I don't mean to prescribe what the appropriate technology is in any particular case, other than to suggest to the committee that that technology continues to develop and that just stating biological nutrient reduction doesn't mean that we're going to stick with the state of the art. And in fact, we could be well behind the state of the art by the time the deadlines that are in this bill start to elapse. Finally, our fourth concern about the bill is the potential violation of the Federal Clean Water Act. Two ways. One, the whole concept of a permit shield. The Federal Clean Water Act allows permit shields, in other words, a guarantee that you won't be subject to tougher restrictions for 5 years. That was a compromise back in the 70s. Some people wanted it longer, some people wanted it shorter, but they agreed on 5 years. Nowhere does the Clean Water Act allow a permit shield, which is what this essentially would do for 20 years. So there's a tension there. The other one is that there is a requirement now under the Federal Clean Water Act that all of these permits include water quality-based effluent limits for nitrogen. they'd be based on what's called a narrative standard, not necessarily a numeric standard, which is what they've been working on. But the requirement of the law to base your effluent limits on what the water quality needs are of the receiving waters remains in the law, and this would create a tension with that as well. So, again, we share the goal. We think it's very important. We thank the PCA for meeting with us a number of times about this issue, but we did want to make sure that we articulated these concerns about the bill as it currently stands. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Strand. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Strand, the difference between 5 and 20 is the difference between a permit and a magic shield, I guess. That's the difference. It seems like we, as the state of Minnesota, had invested, $600,000 on a nitrogen to develop a nitrogen study or a nitrogen standard, like in 2011. Do you remember that, or what's?
I don't remember the Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen. I don't remember the exact amount, but I do remember that there was an effort to get that process moving more quickly.
Representative Hansen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and maybe PCA could follow up on that, because it seems like we had invested public money in developing the nitrogen standard, and here it is 26, I guess that'd be 5 years later.
Ms. Gauthier. Repeat the question, please, Representative Hansen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Gauthier. Did the people of Minnesota invest money into developing a nitrogen standard, and what year was that?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Representative Hansen, yes. The legislature gave the agency some funding, I believe it was in 2010, to start working on a nitrogen aquatic life water quality standard, and we did that. A couple years later, the Environmental Protection Agency instructed us to halt our work in anticipation of several new strains of several research projects being done around the country on this issue, and they wanted us to wait until those research projects were completed and the findings were submitted for publication, peer-reviewed, and published in scientific journals. And so we have been waiting for that process to come to a close. We are told by the EPA that they anticipate that process should come to a close with publication in scientific journals of these several research projects that relate specifically to a nitrogen water quality standard, that should happen sometime this year. However, Representative Hansen, they told us that last year too. So we're on standby because we are a delegate of the United States EPA, and we are on standby waiting for them to tell us to resume our work, in which case we will take the results of this research from around the country. Some of it is from different parts of the country, so we'll look at it and start adapting it and figuring out what it means for Minnesota and continue our work.
Representative Hansen.
And so, Mr. Chair, and that's my concern, that what you just described is uncertainty, that we'd be providing certainty until potentially December 31st, 2051, in a constantly changing data world where we're presenting the information that we've invested in the science. I think when we invest in the science, we're in good shape. I'm not sure the science stays static for until December 31st, 2031. So I know how the vote will occur here, that this will move on, but I think there needs to be a lot of work on this, on defining details, on what intent is. And I'm also concerned because I think we've seen from the agencies for other things, requests for general fund to deal with litigation. And I'm assuming if we adopt this into law, we're probably going to be dealing with litigation there, too.
Representative Parkinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a little bit of clarification. So the voluntary nature of this program is voluntary for the agency too, is that correct?
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, I assume, pardon me, I assume Representative Torkelson, you were referring to line, page 1, line 18, where it says may provide regulatory certainty. And yes, it will be at the discretion of the commissioner, because we want to ensure that the systems being put in place will do the best job possible at those specific sites to remove nitrogen and phosphorus, and as much nitrogen and phosphorus as possible.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if a committee applies for this program, the agency can just say no. It doesn't really work from our perspective, and then they are subject to the normal regulatory requirements. Is that correct?
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, as I said earlier, what we anticipate in terms of implementation, Representative Torkelson and members, is that if a community is interested in this, we would sit down and talk with them and look at what it might mean for their specific site that their facility or facilities are located. We would then work with them from the beginning on design and engineering to try to develop a system that will do the best possible, make the best use of existing technology to get them into compliance with the phosphorus requirements and also remove as much nitrogen as possible. So while theoretically under that language it is possible we would say no, I don't, Mr. Chairman, I don't know why the commissioner would expend all that energy, and we would have put forth this program if we were looking to turn people down. We are not. We are looking to work with communities as best we can, because it's in our best interest to get as much nitrogen out of the water as we can, as soon as we can, because nitrogen is bad for aquatic life.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then just a little different line, the cost of these systems. Does the agency recognize how, when we're trying to meet these standards or apply for programs, the cost of these systems?
Ms. Gauthier, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Torkelson. We, the Commissioner and the Commissioner of Health and the PFA Executive Director, held listening sessions around Minnesota this past fall and winter, because we wanted to learn more about the issues that were facing communities, particularly cost. But we learned about a lot of other things, including the need for more flexibility. And Mr. Chairman, I can't recall if I passed our dashboard out, our new dashboard out in this committee. I may be recalling that erroneously. It may have been a different committee, but I can give this for copying. But our new dashboard is out, and it does show how we did phosphorus water reductions prior to having a water quality standard on phosphorus for lakes or for rivers on a voluntary basis, working with communities that were interested in doing that. So I think in terms of cost, Mr. Chairman, we are concerned with that as an issue, and that is why this proposal couples so well with the bonding and is introduced in conjunction with the bonding request for more funds for grants for cities, specifically the program, the Point Source Implementation Grants, that was specifically created to deal with a situation just like this. We are trying to address that cost issue and the flexibility issue in one program.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. One more question, Mr. Chair. So getting to this cost issue, and you brought up the governor's initiative to include bonding funds for these systems. If the bar is set too high, and if we require systems that are too expensive, those dollars just don't go very far, and we affect a much smaller number of systems, whereas if cost is considered and the bar is set at an appropriate level, our dollars will stretch much further. That may be more of a statement than a question.
Thank you, Representative Perkelson. We need to move on, members, but Ms. Gauthier, quickly.
Just very quickly, Mr. Chairman and Representative Torkelson, while what you say is true, it may also be true that if a community decides to do regulatory certainty and we are able to start removing nitrogen much sooner than we otherwise would be, the state is theoretically getting a bigger bump for that dollar that they're spending at that facility.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks,
Representative Hansen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And is there a fiscal note on this bill?
No, there's not.
If not, I'd ask for one.
Anything else? With that, I would renew my motion to pass and move to the General Register, House File 3409. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
The motion carries. Onto the General Register. With that, members, we have some people from out of the area who are here to testify on Representative Metza's bill, House File 3726. Representative Metza, would you come forward, please?
Representative Metzen, welcome. Members, I'd move House File 3726 to pass and go on to the General Register. Representative Metza, why don't you go ahead, give us a brief overview of the bill, and then we can begin with the testifiers. Let's see, Representative Metza, do you want me to move this A1 to get the bill in the shape we'd like?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, that would be great.
Members, I'll move the A1 to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Amendments adopted. Representative Metza, the bill's before you the way you'd like. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill derives from some work we did creating a new formula for the sulfate standard, and essentially what I was trying to put together was a bill that captured permits that may have had this in there across the state, and basically not hold those permittees to a specific standard until the new formula was given to them. I've worked with the governor's office, the MPCA, and members on this committee, and I think that the bill is in good shape to move forward, and essentially it make sure that these companies in their compliance schedule maintain all compliance, and simply replaces the 10 standard with the number that will come out as the MPCA works on assigning formulas for the discharge waters that it will affect.
And remind us, Representative Metza, how many businesses have been held to this 10 standard?
As far as we know, one.
Thank you. Representative
Hobson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my first question is to you. It seems as though this bill has not met the deadline. It failed the deadline, which normally means technically a bill is dead. Can you help me with the process here?
Representative Hobson, I'll have to think on that one for a minute. Exactly what we have going on.
And particularly, Mr. Chair, since I thought it was maybe your intention to send this directly to the floor, I thought that question needed to be somehow resolved before it left the committee.
Representative Hausman, my motion was to send it to the General Register.
Right. So if it's dead...
I wouldn't say this issue is dead, Representative Hausman.
But there are, I mean, the issue of deadlines usually is fairly well respected, I think.
Let me think about that a little bit. Thank you. Appreciate that. Do you have further questions?
Well, I think maybe I'll wait for some testifiers, and then I'll pursue some other questions.
Welcome, Mr. Sutherland. If you could identify yourself for the record, who you represent, and go ahead with your testimony.
Chairman McNamara, committee members, good morning. My name is Larry Sutherland. I'm the general manager of United States Steel Minnesota Ore Operations, which includes the MinTac and KeyTac facilities on Minnesota's Iron Range. With me today, I have our Director of Environmental, Chrissy Bartovich, to testify as well if needed. I would like to thank the legislators for their continued support of our mining operations in the state of Minnesota. As many know, we are under a severe competitive nature with our iron ore and steel business, not only domestically, but globally. with the products we produce, which all starts with iron ore from Minnesota's Iron Range. I'm here today to express my support for Representative Metz's House File 3726. This legislation would address important issues at our Keetac operations in Keewatin, Minnesota. As you know, the United States steel industry has been severely and negatively impacted by unfair trade, as our own Department of Commerce has most recently discovered the severe harm that's being done to our domestic steel industry and are appropriately addressing that and hopefully continue to address the severe competitive nature that the overcapacity of the steel industry has created in our domestic products. As a result of this, many iron mining facilities on the Iron Range have been idled. Keetac facility in particular has been idle since April of 2015 and continues to be idle today. We appreciate the support of our elected leaders here in Minnesota and in Washington, D.C. to address the illegal and unfair trade practices and to try to level the playing field with our foreign competitors. As is the case with state-federal efforts to level this playing field on environmental and international trade issue, Representative Metz's House File 3726 is also aimed at treating Minnesota's iron mining facilities fairly. The Keetac facility, just as a matter of history, began operations in 1967 and it produces approximately 6 million tons of taconite pellets annually. We employ approximately 500 people when fully operational. Keetac is one of the country's most environmentally efficient iron mining facilities. Our discharges range anywhere from 20 to 120 milligrams per liter of sulfate. This facility has been discharging water for almost 50 years, and to this day there remains healthy wild rice downstream from our discharges. In 2010, the Keetac facility needed to discharge water from a former mining pit. The MPCA required an amendment to Keetac's water permit for U.S. Steel to proceed with this activity, included that permit requirements related to an outdated sulfate water quality standard to protect wild rice. In 2011, the Minnesota legislature recognized the problems with that water quality standard, directed the MPCA to update the standard and to exercise its authority under federal and state laws and regulations to ensure to the fullest extent possible that no permittee is required to expend funds for design and implementation of sulfate treatment technologies. In 2015, the legislature again acted, recognizing that the water quality standard revision was taking longer than expected to revise. The 2015 law prohibits the MPCA from placing provisions and permits that require permittees to spend money on designing or implementing sulfate treatment technologies under a standard until a standard is adopted. House File 3726 is designed to place the U.S. Steel Keetac facility in the same position as all other mining facilities on the Iron Range. The Keetac facility is the only mining facility in Minnesota currently with the 10 milligram per liter standard in its permit. Because the Keetac permits are unique, House File 3726 is designed to clarify the intention of the 2011 and 2015 legislation to ensure that the MPCA will treat Keetac the same way as all other water discharges in Minnesota and not require any expenditures to design or implement sulfate treatment technologies until the wild rice standard is updated. On behalf of U.S. Steel and our employees at our Keetac facility, we respectfully request that you support Representative Metz's House File 3726. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Manager Sutherland. We appreciate your testimony. Representative Hausman, I'll change my motion to lay the bill over. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sutherland, on March 11, you signed a schedule of compliance. What does that signature mean as it relates to this bill? If there was conversation, you signed that. why are we seeing this bill?
Mr. Sutherland.
Chairman McNamara, Representative Hausman, I would request that I be allowed to have my environmental director of our Minnesota ore operations come forward and answer some of the specific and more technological questions related to the scheduled compliance.
Ms. Bartovich, can you come forward? Identify yourself for the record, and can you remind us your family's history in the iron ore industry and how long you've been a ranger?
Absolutely. Good morning. My name is Chrissy Bartovich. I'm the Director of Environmental for U.S. Steel's Minnesota Ore Operations, Mintec, Keytec. Apologize if I start coughing throughout this at all. I seem to have contacted some bronchitis recently. So, I have almost 17 years of experience. I have a bachelor's degree in community health and a master's in environmental health and safety from the University of Minnesota Duluth. I grew up on the Iron Range, and I'm a third-generation miner. My grandfather was a Butler Taconite employee. He retired from there. My dad constructed in the building trades the Phase 2 line at Keytec before he worked at Butler and ultimately retired last year from United Taconite. So, pretty healthy history there. My my dad's family actually grew up in the Nashwauk area, so the Keytec facility is had a pretty big role in my entire family's history. As far as the question at hand, the schedule of compliance that we signed particularly relates because, and I don't have the bill in front of me, but the language says that if you are under a signed if the permittee is in substantial compliance with any compliance schedule permit conditions or has an executed schedule of compliance to resolve any non-compliance that existed. So there was some question as to if we were in compliance with the compliance schedule that was in the permit. We worked with MPCA over the last year, had a lot of discussions on what we were doing and where we were at. And then on March 11th, executed that schedule of compliance. So that's specifically that line item is what relates to Keytec.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My confusion then is in the A1 amendment, why does that date say May 1st? Schedule of compliance that is in effect on May 1st.
Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Ms. Bartovich.
I guess I'm not sure.
Representative Manson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was some language that we had all agreed to. I think that they're still working on essentially trying to avoid litigation with the state and that any adjustments that might need to be made in that schedule officially with the agency and between the company would be addressed. However, the purpose is not to allow them to come out of compliance. The purpose of the amendment was to comfort language, essentially, to state to everyone that it was not my intention as the author for them to jump out of compliance, but to have working room with the agency to get their language in the shape where this company in particular and any others that might be affected that we haven't heard from be allowed to work on a level playing field, essentially. And again, this was corrective, or I guess clarification language that stems from Representative Moline's bill. I believe it was House File 1006 that we passed last year and clarifies that standard would be the new formula that the agency has proposed in their rulemaking process.
Mr. Chair, I didn't hear any clarification, and maybe to your point, I mean, basically, Mr. Sutherland's signature is on a schedule of compliance signed on March 11, and I'm still not hearing why we just adopted the A1 amendment where we use May 1st, because did that signature mean anything? Is the company backing away from that signature? Why is it now May 1st? I didn't quite understand the discrepancy of dates.
Ms. Bartovich.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I don't know the significance of the May 1st date, and we are definitely not backing away from the schedule of compliance. That is an enforceable document. That is an agreement that we made with the agency, and we are not backing away from that.
Representative Hausman.
I'll maybe check with the department later.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, so would it be, if you have the March 11th agreement and nothing happens between now and May 1st, the March 11th agreement is locked in by the A1 amendment. Is that another way to look at it?
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I think that's
Representative Hansen.
So, and it looked like the intent was to move this to the floor, so maybe it's an assumption on my part that you were looking to get this resolved before May 1st. But if there was a change between now and May 1st, then that schedule of compliance would be locked in. But if there's a change after May 1st, the A1 doesn't do anything. So you're by law, if this became law, you'd be locking in the March 11th unless something else happened.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Next I have Mr. Toby, President. President Toby, come forward. Give us your brief testimony. Mr. Toby, can you remind me how many of your neighbors are unemployed currently because the plant shut down?
Good morning. Thank you for letting me speak here today. My name is Cliff Toby. I'm the president of Local 2660 of the steelworkers up at Keetac. We currently have approximately 500 people laid off up there. 360 of them are are people who I represent. I'm here today. I like to say that I'm fourth generation miner on the Iron Range because my grandfather and father both retired from the mine that I work at, and my grandmother actually worked during World War II laying track in the mine while my grandpa went to war. I'm here today to speak because I have 20 years at this mine, and in those 20 years I see the diligence that U.S. Steel puts in to doing to producing pellets in the most environmentally safe way that they can. I also live on a lake which is downstream from our plant, and I feel confident because of those 20 years of seeing how U.S. Steel does environmental compliance. I feel confident that my waters are safe. So I'm here today just to encourage you to pass this amendment and make it a level playing field.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if I might add, Keetac in particular has the lowest discharge out of all the plants on the Iron Range in regard to the sulfate. And we feel that as this moves forward, looking at some of the formulas and with the science around the iron mitigation, in lowering that Keetac may be the only plant on the Iron Range when that formula goes into effect that actually is able to meet the standard without
Thank
many
you.
Changes.
Next I have Ms. Donnelly from the 49ers. Didn't I see you here? Ms. Donnelly, if you could come forward, give us your brief testimony, add anything new you want to add.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Julia Donnelly. I'm here on behalf of the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 49. I'll be very brief. We join in support of this provision along with our brothers and sisters in the steelworkers. We urge your support respectfully. That's it.
Thank you. Seeing no question, next I have Mr. Tammen. You want to come down? Last I have Mr. Strand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob Tammen from Sudan, Minnesota, and I worked in several of the taconite plants. My wife and I live near Lake Vermilion, which of course is downstream of Mintac's leaking tailings pond. And I would like to say that I've checked some of the downstream waters of the conductivity meter. Our taconite mining industry on the range is degrading our public waters, and my concern here is that we've got this fairly complicated legislation when we already have a variance process. And so yesterday I went up to the library here and looked up Minnesota Administrative Rules 7050.0190, variance from standards, and I'll read a couple clauses. The strict enforcement of any provision of these standards would cause undue hardship. The agency in its discretion may grant a variance. The agency does that. And when we hear of the terrible trials of the industry, it's not because we got a bunch of radicals in our agencies trying to shut down our industry. They work with the industry all the time. We've heard about the schedules of compliance. That's our agencies working with our industry. We have schedules of compliance. We have variances. We have procedures in place to deal with the problems of environmental enforcement. We don't need more legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Tamman. Representative Houseman.
So, Mr. Chair, just to clarify, so in other words, this is a piece of legislation for one company instance, and you're saying we already have the tools to do exactly what this is accomplishing. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Mr. Tamman.
Mr. Chairman, members, that is true. I've worked at U.S. Steel's MinTac, Plant Hibbing Tac, little construction over there, Reserve, Erie. They all have water problems of one kind or another. None of them have been shut down because of our enforcement. They've been shut down because of global competition. We have low-grade ore bodies. Our iron taconite is 25%, trying to compete with 50% in other countries. Our proposed copper is less than 1%. So the problems we're trying to address here aren't really addressing our industry problems. This environmental issue can be settled by the agencies and industry. I was involved in a little legal action on the Dunca site 5 years ago. The Dunca site is sailing right along like it always has under a schedule of compliance. Our agencies work with our industry. It's not a problem that we can't deal with without a bunch of legislation.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, I would just, you know, for the sake of the operating engineers, I thought it was important for them to understand how accommodating the state has been.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I sympathize with the operating engineers. I was a mining electrician both for the company and contractors. I packed my suitcase many times, and as long as we've got an industry that's not really competitive because they have a low-grade ore body, the people that work there had better polish up their skills and get ready to go on the road, because I did it many times myself. I appreciated coming down here to the cities to work for Xcel Energy. There's no easy answer to having an industry that's not really competitive.
Thank you, Mr. Tamman. Mr. Strand, if you can come
Mr.
forward.
Mr. Chair, if I could add in between.
Representative Metza, go ahead, Mr. Strand.
We do have the most productive workforce on the planet, producing more tons per man hour, just to correct the record from Mr. Tamman's statement. And I'm very proud of those workers. Our whole state, I believe, is proud of those workers. And, you know, Mr. Tamman, I respect you coming down to testify your opinion, but for the record, we do a really good job with what we do, meeting the strictest environmental standards on the planet.
Thank you. Mr. Strand, identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name, again, is Scott Strand. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, MCA. MCA is a public interest environmental law and science organization headquartered here in St. Paul, and we have been involved in the dispute underlying this legislation for many years. MCA does oppose this bill. Indeed, we oppose any bill that's intended to essentially usurp the regular law enforcement process in particular cases involving particular parties. We believe that's a bad precedent. We believe that runs afoul of the special legislation provision in our state constitution. But we have specific objections as well. Let me just put some of this in context. All members of the committee understand that this is about the sulfate standard that was adopted back in 1973. It was true for several decades that standard was rarely enforced. Water quality permits did not include effluent limits to deal with sulfates to attend that 10 milligram standard. And so we do have a number of lakes and rivers that have elevated sulfate levels. Now, this was finally addressed at PTAC in the 2011 permits, 5 years ago. You remember in my previous testimony, I talked about the five-year term that water permits have. So the permits are coming up again. But in 2011, there was an attempt to impose an effluent limit. The standard is 10. The effluent limit was 14. That was probably too high. But number two, it included schedules of compliance extending 8 or 9 years. That specifically violated both federal and state rules. Again, schedules of compliance cannot extend beyond the term of a permit, 5 years. In fact, if they extend more than 1 year under Minnesota law, there need to be enforceable interim steps that show progress towards meeting the effluent limit. None of that was included in the permit. KETAC was permitted to do some monitoring, do some studies, eventually do some pilot studies, all to see whether or not they could come up with a way to comply with the standard years after the permit expired. None of those, even those interim steps, were accomplished. The pilot study that was supposed to be the centerpiece of this effort never got done. And that's why even the MPCA that I think worked out that very generous permit found itself compelled to start an enforcement proceeding because even the bare minimum wasn't being accomplished. Now, I know that some people believe the existing sulfate standards are too strict. Others obviously don't think that they're strict enough. The MPC has commenced a process to develop a whole suite of wild rice standards for different rules for different waters. We're going to see where all that ends up and whether any changes can get by the EPA. Our concern is that if there are any changes, then that's going to be, there will be an attempt to essentially erase the terms of not only the permits, but the settlement agreement, essentially of the schedule of compliance that was used to resolve the enforcement dispute. We don't think that's something that the legislature should be doing. We believe KETAC should have to comply with the terms of their current permits. We believe that any new permits they receive should comply with the requirements of both federal and state law, and this legislation is contrary to that.
Thank you. Members, we're going to try and have this one wrapped up by a quarter two so we can do Representative Hackbar's dry cleaning bill. Representative Hackbar's dry cleaning bill needs to go to gun lobs this week yet. Representative Hausman, to the point of the bill, I do want to move the bill to the General Register. This is a Finance Committee. It's in the purview of a Finance Committee, so it's met that deadline. To that point, Representative Hackbart.
Oh, no, that's correct, Chairman. Bill to go quickly to the floor.
Thank you for bringing that to my attention, Representative Hackbart. To that point, Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, usually that means that there's fiscal note or some sort of fiscal impact of a bill if it's measured in that way. So I think that's sort of an interesting approach, unusual. And I would also suggest, I was hoping that if you were laying it over, we'd have some opportunity for all of us to get some clarity. If Mr. Sutherland signed a schedule of compliance on March 11, why does this legislation now have a date of May 1st, and should that be March 11? Is because it suggests that really that schedule of compliance wasn't binding and that there's still negotiation that I don't know where the department stands on that and how they would, whether they believed that there was a binding signature at that point. I was hoping that if you held it over that would give us an opportunity to resolve that. But I do think, Mr. Chair, for a bill to have no fiscal note and no fiscal impact, to say we're passing it because this is a Finance Committee, I think is unusual.
Well, I respect your opinion. Thank you, Representative Hausman. To clarify, the motion is to send a bill to the General Register. Any additional testimony? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay?
No.
Bill's on to the General Register. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you
for all coming
Chair
down and testifying. Thank you for what you do. And Mr. Bartovich, I hope you get over your bronchitis. Representative Hackbart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move House File 3685.
Representative Hackbart, could you explain the bill?
Thank you. I have Ms. Sherry Munyon here with me today. Could we adopt the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that I'd like? It's actually just adopting the Senate language.
Representative Hackbart moves the A1 to get the bill in the shape he'd like. Representative Hansen, to that motion.
Well, just, Mr. Chair, I just want to, you know, I think that, I don't know if Representative Metz is still here and some of the interest, but I think everybody was trying to have the conversation and work out legitimately concerns. And so I think it's unfortunate that the vote, after you had said we were going to hold till a quarter two, to move quickly with that vote. I think it's unfortunate. I think that Representative Hausman and Representative Metza and maybe even others on our side or your side may have had questions. I had a question of MPCA, and I was talking with the DNR. So I just think it's unfortunate you moved a little quick with the gavel there, because I think we could have clarified and worked some of this out. And I just want that on the record.
Representative Hansen, I asked if there was any additional testimony. No one spoke up. It's been the history of the way I run the committee. If I don't see you, just speak up, Mr. Chair. No one did that. Does anybody else want to make a point about the last bill right now? I'm more than willing. You want to make a motion to reconsider the motion to take it off the table? You want to do that? I can have Representative Hackbarth move away. No one raised their voice. If you had something to say, you should have spoke up. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I was speaking with the DNR, and I didn't know that whether they were speaking about this issue or not. And so I turned to talk to them. I did want to get the PCA on the record on this question to March 11th. I see that they are gone now. But I think the clarifying question was, if the March 11th arbitration agreement is settled on line 1.5 of the adopted amendment. That was the question I wanted to have the agency resolve. I don't know if they're still here, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Kadalka, did you want to make to that point? Or Ms. Gauthier? Yeah. Representative Hackbarth, why don't you guys move aside for a second? Thank you. Sorry for that.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
Pardon me?
Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
You didn't hear the question.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I did not. I had Hansen. Stepped out to get it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Metz and Ms. Gauthier, I expressed concern while you were outside about the rapid movement, and I said I did have a question, just, and it gets to this issue of the March 11th agreement between KETAC and the agency. So under the A1 amendment that Representative Metz passed earlier, does that on one line 1.14 and 1.15, does that lock in the March 11th arbitration agreement, or are there still negotiations going on? Is it the agreement is settled, and that I need some clarity in terms of what that is? And Mr. Chair, I don't think we have to I just want this on the record.
Ms. Gauthier.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen. Mr. Chairman, if it would be all right with you, I have an attorney from MPCA to answer that question, who's more familiar with the details than I am.
You can identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Michael Schmidt. I'm a staff attorney with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And Mr. Chair, to answer Representative Hansen's question, the March 11th scheduled compliance did resolve the alleged noncompliance that MPCA was working with U.S. Steel about, and so that was a final action to resolve the noncompliance.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so under the amendment that says nothing in this section shall relieve the permittee from its obligation to satisfy the requirements of that. There's no get out of jail card here. With the amended version, they still must follow that schedule of compliance agreed to on March 11th, even after May 1st, if nothing changes.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Excuse me, sir, I missed your name. We weren't paying attention.
My apologies. Michael Schmidt with MPCA.
Mr. Schmidt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, yes, the amendment ensures that the regulated party will have to continue to comply with the schedule of compliance that was signed on March 11th.
Representative Hansen.
And finally, Mr. Chair, and thank you. So there's no other negotiations going on relating to this permit?
Mr. Schmidt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, ongoing civil investigations are not public, but this resolved any noncompliance related to the sulfate issue that for the sulfate schedule of compliance that was in the permit at the time.
Representative Hansen.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And the March 11th agreement is public, though, correct?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, to the gentleman testifying, so why do we need this legislation?
Mr. Schmidt, do you have any opinion on that?
I'll defer to Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hausman. Mr. Chairman and Representative Hausman, this is not our bill.
Representative Hausman. Thank you. Anybody in the audience want to speak about the bill that we just passed? Anybody in the audience want to speak about the bill we already passed?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Metz, I think we're done, but go ahead.
I was going to say the purpose of this, I believe, was to avoid litigation with the state. I know that U.S. Steel felt that they needed legislation, and that working with the agency, they didn't feel that the law we passed in 2015 covered this issue for that specific permittee. And that overall, what we're trying to do with this is avoid litigation with a company that would essentially be suing the state of Minnesota.
Thank you. Anybody else want to speak about the bill? Anybody else? Seeing none, thank you for coming back, Representative Metza. Mr. Schmidt, thank you for coming down. We'll try again. Representative Hackmarthen. Representative Hackbarth, I think we'll do a do-over to be sure that we've got the bill before us. Why don't you start fresh now?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would move House File 3685 to bring the bill before us. I believe we're going to send it to government operations. And
correct.
Then I would move the A1 amendment to get it in the shape that I'd like.
To the A1. All those in favor of getting the bill in the shape the author would like by adopting the A1, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay. The bill is in the shape you would like. Ms. Munyon, if you could identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Sherry Munyon, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Cleaners Association. This bill will resolve the requirements in last year's omnibus finance bill. The amended bill clarifies the statutory definition of a dry cleaner, improves the viability of the fund, and releases the appropriation made last year. Without adoption of this legislation, the appropriated funds would go away. Lines 111 through 115 in the bill are where you'll find the definition of a dry cleaner. Past practice allowed for developers who do not pay into the fund to access the cleanup dollars. Lines 119 to 120 change the limitation to a flat amount of $1,000 rather than 20% of the balance in the account. This is technical in nature. The major part of the legislation and the amendment deals with expedited rulemaking authority for the MPCA. And what had been in the original bill was comfort language that required agreement by the industry with the PCA prior to rulemaking, expedited rulemaking going forward. That comfort language was changed to a formal process, which is provided under Subdivision 5. And when invoked, that means that the industry can request, can submit 100 signatures and move the expedited rulemaking into general making process. The MPCA and the cleaners are continuing to work on the rules, but they are not completed, and these rules are modeled after the Petro Fund. The amendment also makes a change where language would have allowed just a one-time ability for the MPCA on payment rates and allows that to be ongoing. This is similar to the Petro Fund and allows for inflationary increases. With me today is Dart Poach, a member of the Cleaners Association Board, and Kirk Kudelka, Deputy Commissioner of the PCA, is also here.
Ms. Munyon, Representative Fabian brought to my attention, you mentioned $1,000, but you meant the limitation is $100,000. I'm not sure, you, just to clarify, the limits per incident is $100,000.
Oh, I'm sorry, it was $200,000 to 20%.
$100,000. Mr. Poach, do you want to identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony?
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Dart Poach. I'm a dry cleaner, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Cleaners Association, and we support the amendment and ask for support on this bill also. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kudalka, do you want to speak to where the MPCA is on the bill?
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Kudalka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. We've been working with the Minnesota Cleaners Association and support the bill and as amended to continue working on the long-term viability of the dry cleaner account. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you working on it. I know it's been a tough one to work through all the issues here. Thank you. Discussion to the bill. Further discussion to the bill. Anybody in the audience want to speak for or against the bill? See no further discussion. All those, Representative Hackbar, any final comments? Renews his motion to send House File 3685 on to government operations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Representative Hackbar, you're off to government operations. Members, we're adjourned.